Welcome to the San Antonio Report, brought to you by OWL Radio, a community service of the Low Vision Resource Center. I'm Randall Allen, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from this week's San Antonio Report. Our first story is titled CPS Energy Leaves Door Open to Reinstate Bonus Pay for Employees, Including the CEO. While CPS Energy scrapped its incentive pay program for salaried employees in early 2020 as the pandemic thrust the utility into financial chaos, its contract with new president and CEO Rudy Garza leaves the door open for a future bonus pay structure. Garza, who signed a contract last week giving him a $655,000 annual salary, but no bonus pay, has said he's happy with that compensation structure and doesn't need a bonus to do the job. But bonus pay, depending on its form, can play an important role in performance and retention. CPS Energy's past two CEOs, for example, earned relatively low base pay compared to other public power industry leaders, but had the ability to earn additional at-risk pay by meeting performance metrics set by the board. The board's personnel committee at that time wanted to use the incentive as a retention tool, said Lisa Lewis, the chief administrative officer for the utility. With a higher base salary, Garza has none of the incentives that come with at-risk compensation. Janie Gonzalez, CPS Energy's Board of Trustees Vice Chair, said that while a bonus is not on the table for Garza right now, the utility must keep the option open as a means to retain Garza and employees overall as the labor market continues to tighten. Gonzalez told the San Antonio Report on Thursday that the board and utility staff have discussed how to possibly restructure employee compensation as a whole in the near future to better attract and retain talent. CPS Energy is facing a serious workforce shortage as up to half of its 3,000-member workforce becomes eligible to retire by 2026. That's why Garza's contract states that he is eligible to participate in any future incentive pay or deferred compensation plan provided to CPS Energy executive-level employees. Not having any type of employee incentive program, Lewis said, can make recruiting and retaining talent even more challenging than it already is. All of the major companies in town, she said, are recruiting the same people. But those big employers, and she mentioned USAA, HEB, and Valero as examples, all have some sort of structured incentive program. Prior to 2020, CPS Energy's salaried staff's compensation included a bonus component based on whether performance metrics were hit company-wide. The utility's skilled craft employees opted out of the program sometime in the aughts, Lewis said. Before then, every utility employee was part of the program. In 2019, after reading the San Antonio Report's two-part investigative series on executive compensation at CPS Energy and the San Antonio Water System, Mayor Ron Nirenberg called for an end to the bonus system at the city-owned utility. Executive pay in local public sector jobs was a hot-button issue in San Antonio at the time. A year earlier, city voters had approved the firefighters' union-backed charter amendment that limited the pay of San Antonio city manager to 10 times the salary of the lowest-paid city employee, or around $300,000. That year, then CPS Energy CEO Paula Gold Williams brought home just over $930,000, which included her roughly $485,000 base salary. The rest was bonus pay. having roughly half her pay be at risk, was approved by the board after being engineered by former CPS Energy trustee Ed Kelly, who worked with consultants to come up with a CEO salary package based largely on performance. "I didn't want to pay that big number," Kelly told the San Antonio Report in 2019. "I wanted them to have the opportunity to earn that big number." "And that's pretty typical for executive compensation," said Corey Morrow, a senior client partner with Korn Ferry, a consulting firm CPS Energy has used in the past for executive compensation analysis and at least one CEO search. "The talent pool for top executives is already small," he said, "so companies must craft compensation packages to not only keep but retain executives." At the same time, Mora said, having performance metrics tied to pay allows companies or boards to change our talent if the performance is not there. Nirenberg's wish to see the end of bonus pay for CPS Energy executives was realized when the pandemic hit. The utility had been about to pay out roughly $13 million in bonuses to about 1,800 salaried employees, including the at-risk portion of Gold Williams' pay. Last year, however, SAW's Board of Trustees, including Nirenberg, approved a deferred bonus structure for Puente. Per the contract, Puente must stay employed at SAWS for 4 years before he is eligible to receive the bonuses he may earn during that period. Nirenberg told the San Antonio Report at the time that he was supportive of the deferred bonus because he believes it is more transparent than annual at-risk pay and because it acts as a retention tool. CPS Energy's Gonzalez said trustees would like to have the option to offer Garza a similar deferred incentive, but doing that immediately was not an option. "CPS Energy is not set up the same way," Gonzalez said, "so we could not do that overnight." She said any kind of bonus pay would need to be considered holistically because it's not just about Rudy, it's about the entire organization. "Because while Garza's pay is settled for now, how to attract and retain talent remains a looming challenge for the utility. We need to figure out how to design a new compensation package that folks see as fair, but that's also competitive," Gonzalez said. "We are still challenged by a workforce that wants a certain type of compensation package, and that includes incentives. This is something we need to address even outside of Rudy." Our next story is titled 3-Day Stay Policy Pushes Some Migrants from San Antonio's Resource Center to the Street. The City of San Antonio's policy of releasing migrants from its resource center after 3 days has prompted some migrants, including families with children, to sleep on the streets. In a vacant lot across from the Migrant Resource Center on San Pedro, old carpets laid out on the concrete served as bedding. A hole in the fence allows entry to migrants who sleep there. One family set up a tent for shelter. Many of the migrants interviewed in the vacant lot last week indicated that they would be staying in San Antonio rather than moving to their original destination. Alexander Perez said he'd been sleeping in the lot for the past 2 weeks, working day labor jobs to save money for rent to stay. "I want to stay in San Antonio because I haven't seen racism here. There's a lot of good people here. There's plenty of jobs," said the Venezuelan immigrant last week. On Friday afternoon, city officials visited the vacant lot after a reporter told them about migrants sleeping there, including families with small children. They learned that earlier in the afternoon, police had swept the lot, said Rob Gonzalez, a member of Iglesia Pentecostal Impacto de Amor, a local Spanish-language church. He told city officials that his church had taken in the families who had been sleeping there. Jessica Dovalina, assistant director of the city's Department of Human Services, who visited the vacant lot Friday afternoon, said she had been unaware that some migrants who had left the center were sleeping outside. Davalina emphasized that the city's purpose in opening the central hub has been to temporarily assist migrants on their way to their host cities. She said she hadn't heard that some migrants appear to be changing their travel plans to stay in San Antonio. The vast majority of migrants passing through San Antonio are headed to other U.S. cities, city officials say. Those who don't have immediate travel plans can work with center employees known as navigators, according to the city, who help connect them to resources like Catholic Charities, which provides immigrants support through a variety of programs. It's up to the migrant to seek help if they need it, said Tara Ford, Director of Marketing and Communications for Catholic Charities. She added that anyone seeking assistance will receive it. No migrants, especially those with small children, have been turned out by the center without being given resources to find shelter, Davalina said, noting that families can ask to stay for additional days. Johanna Cortez, a Venezuelan migrant who arrived in San Antonio with her 3-year-old son, said Thursday that she had asked an official at the center if she could stay one more day until her husband, who was still processing, arrived at the center. The center employee told me no. I had to find a way and that she was going to rip my wristband. I asked her what to do, said Cortez, who was sitting in the vacant lot while her son played with other children there. She said the employee gave her an address for help, but she chose to stay close to the center to wait for her husband. Abraham Araque, another Venezuelan migrant, the city has said about 90% of current migrants are from Venezuela, arrived with his wife, 3-year-old son, and 5-year-old daughter. During their time at the center, the family scratched their original plan to settle in New York and instead decided to settle in San Antonio because of job opportunities in the area. We're going to sleep over there, said Araque on Thursday as he pointed to the vacant lot nearby, until we make some money for rent. On Tuesday, Araque told the San Antonio Report that he found trying to stay in San Antonio too complicated. After getting paid for some work, Araque was able to buy plane tickets to New York. It is unclear what happened to Cortez and her son. City officials said late Wednesday it had no record of anyone registered by that name at the center. Carlos Garcia, pastor of Iglesia Pentecostal Impacto de Amor, said she was not among the families taken in Friday. Two families are staying with church members, he said. One has since been connected to Catholic Charities. Assistant City Manager Lori Houston said Tuesday the city has only asked 81 migrants out of 22,000 who have been served to leave, either for behavioral issues or because their 3 days were up. City officials said all 81 were unaccompanied males. There may be people who just leave on their own, but we only asked 81 to exit, she said. Asked about a family of 5 picked up from the vacant lot by church members, a city spokeswoman said the family left after 3 days on their own and were not forced to leave. The spokeswoman confirmed that migrants arriving at the center are told that they may stay for 3 days, and that the migrants may or may not alert staff when they leave. Some migrants interviewed outside the resource center over the past several weeks have said that they were asked to leave after 3 days, while others said they left after 3 days because they were told that was the rule. According to Houston, between 500 and 1,000 migrants arrive at the center a day, and roughly 70% leave within 24 hours because they already have travel plans. The remaining third are often trying to obtain the money to purchase tickets, the city said. Many do that by working, even though they may not do so legally. They find jobs outside the center, as cars and trucks line up daily seeking workers. Perez, for example, has worked construction, carpentry, and gardening jobs. Perez said he's now earned enough money to stay in a hotel near the center so he can keep getting day work. He said even after Friday's sweep by police, migrants are still sleeping in the lot. They just want to work for a better life, he said. When we come for refuge, they don't allow us to work, he said. We come to work. We don't come to ask or beg. There are many opportunities here. Our next story is titled, Bexar County's Plan to Cut Polling Places Draws Fire from Voting Rights Group. The Texas Civil Rights Project, which sued successfully to keep Bexar County from closing some voting locations in 2020, warned it could challenge the county again if election officials follow through with a plan that would reduce the number of Election Day polling places. The move comes as Democrats across the state are worried about counties closing voting locations that could hurt their candidates' chances in the November midterms amid their growing excitement about statewide races. The Bexar County Commissioner's Court approved a list of 51 early voting locations Tuesday and asked Elections Administrator Jackie Kalalin to go back and increase the number of Election Day locations from the 259 she proposed to a minimum of 302. That was the number a court ordered the county to operate during the 2020 presidential election after a coalition of progressive groups challenged the way election officials had distributed voting locations throughout the county. Probably, technically, they're still violating the law, said Joaquin Gonzalez, a lawyer for the Texas Civil Rights Project, of the plan commissioners agreed to for Election Day voting locations. It's unlikely the groups would take legal action if the Commissioner's Court and Elections Department bumped the number of polling places back up to 302, he added, but it would depend on if any community groups wanted to sue over it. Tuesday's meeting was packed with activists and neighborhood leaders who signed up to speak in favor of maintaining voting locations in their neighborhoods and on their college campuses. In an email sent to commissioners last week, Gonzalez warned that the county should work with the community to resolve complaints about voting access or risk opening itself up to another lawsuit on similar grounds as the last one. Texas Civil Rights Project's 2020 lawsuit argued that Bexar County had not followed the legal framework for determining where voting sites should be located. A judge agreed, but because little time remained before the election, the activist groups settled for restoring some previously used voting locations, as opposed to revisiting the entire list. The baseline for any election is one polling place for each election precinct, or 776 locations for Bexar County, said Gonzalez. There are laws that allow you to combine certain precincts, but it's not that you can just do it willy-nilly, which is essentially what the county was doing. Headed into this fall's midterms, Kalanin said the county's use of voting centers, which allow voters to cast their ballot at any location, was supposed to allow a reduction in the number of locations. She once again proposed a reduction in the number of locations, using the previous election's locations as a starting point. Gonzalez said in the email that by recycling the old list of voting locations, the county elections department is again misinterpreting the election code. In order to avoid litigation, the commissioner's court should ensure that the community feels satisfied that the voting locations provide sufficient access, he wrote. Commissioners at Tuesday's meeting worked to accommodate a variety of requests for polling locations at specific spots. Students from several universities made their case for keeping locations on campus so that people can avoid driving somewhere to vote. Roland Toscano, superintendent of East Central Independent School District, asked commissioners to keep voting locations in his area because the school district is trying again to pass a bond after one failed last November. In addition to Callinan's proposed 46 early voting locations, commissioners added to the list polling spots at Texas A&M University San Antonio, Our Lady of the Lake University, St. Mary's University, St. Paul Community Center, and the Frank Garrett Multi-Service Center. When it comes to Election Day locations, however, commissioners have less authority. Even though most members of the Democrat-controlled court would like to expand the number of Election Day voting locations and are willing to provide the funds to do so, they can ask the elections administrator only for amendments to her list. They can't directly order her to add a location. Commissioners voted 4-1 Tuesday to allow Kalanen to begin making arrangements to set up polling places in the 259 Election Day locations she proposed Tuesday, but asked her to return with a list of at least 43 additional sites. Commissioner Mary Ellen Bernard of Precinct 3, the court's only Republican, cast the lone no vote. "We cannot go lower than that. Otherwise, we're going back to court," said Commissioner Tommy Calvert from Precinct 4. Tuesday's discussion comes as Democrats in Texas are expressing increasing concern about reduced numbers of voting locations in a year where they expect big national issues like abortion and guns to drive people to the polls. In light of many recent changes Texas has embraced that makes voting more difficult, Gonzalez asked commissioners to consider all of this in the larger context of what's happening in the state. "Our state leadership has been taking a death by 1,000 cuts approach to voting rights, making small restrictions that only reduce turnouts on the margin, but cumulatively these add up," he said. "They prevent the most vulnerable communities from turning out by grades 5-10% of what they otherwise would be, which is enough to sway competitive elections. By most public polling, Texas statewide races currently fall within that margin." Kalanen says she wants to use her department's resources as efficiently as possible, deploying a finite number of voting machines in locations that have the greatest number of voters. Her effort has found support from Bexar County Republican Party Chair Jeff McManus, who sought to partner with Kalanen in closing even more. Commissioners argued that the cuts would primarily hurt communities of color and young people, while preserving most of the locations in precincts that typically vote Republican. Speaking at an AFL-CIO breakfast in San Antonio on Monday, Democratic gubernatorial hopeful Beto O'Rourke echoed that concern. O'Rourke told the crowd that Texas has closed roughly 750 voting locations since 2013, following changes to the Voting Rights Act. "We know that this is targeted at not all Texans, but some more than others," said O'Rourke. "When you look at where those closures are, they're in the fastest growing black and brown neighborhoods in the state of Texas." Activists at Tuesday's meeting also want the county to put a voting location in the Bexar County Jail for people who have not yet been convicted of a felony that would make them ineligible to vote, but who were incarcerated after the deadline to request a mail-in ballot. Though Harris County runs a voting location in its jail, Kalanen said it would be impossible to meet the legal requirements because every voting location has to be open to all voters. "We've done a lot of research into it," said Kalanen. "It's going to open us up to lots of litigation because of the numerous code violations that would come in place because of the parking, because of the lack of being able to campaign." Our last story is titled A First Look at Plans for Hemisphere Hotel in Downtown San Antonio. A developer's request to the city's design review panel is providing a first look at a hotel tower plan for Hemisphere. 6 years in the making and forged through an agreement between the Hemisphere Park Area Redevelopment Corporation and Zachary Hospitality, the hotel is part of the developer's plan for a mixed-use development within Civic Park. The Historic and Design Review Commission on Wednesday granted conceptual approval for what's being called the Hemisphere Hotel, the first step in the process for new development in the downtown area. Construction on the hotel is expected to start in December, according to a timeline in the developer's request to the commission, and be open to guests in February 2025. Situated in the northwestern corner of Hemisphere, Civic Park is under construction and, like the hotel, is also expected to be completed in time for the NCAA Men's Final Four to be hosted in San Antonio on April 5th and 7th, 2025. Design plans for the hotel by the San Antonio-based architecture firm Overland Partners show a 17-story tower at 222 South Alamo Street with street-level retail space and 200 hotel rooms above. The tower is shaped in a curve with either end designed to be situated near planned office and residential developments within the 5-acre section of the park. The city's Unified Development Code does not limit the number of stories for structures in the River Improvement Overlay 3, where the hotel will be located, as long as the height is consistent with other buildings in the vicinity and it does not block sunshine from reaching the Riverwalk. Thank you for listening to today's San Antonio Report. If you have questions or comments about the program, please call us at 210-829-4223. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Randall Allen saying goodbye from Owl Radio.